You're here. We have three meetings where we study this book, which is the Program of Recovery. We have a meeting tomorrow night at 6 where we're going to be finishing Doctor's Opinion and great stuff, and we'll start Bill's story. We're going to be looking at the problem and the solution. On Wednesday night, we're looking at step 3 in depth, and we're looking at through the Carry This Message by Joe McHugh, and we'd finished the step 3 in the book, and all those podcasts are on the site. And we had a really good, I thought it was really good. We looked at the instincts of life, what makes up self-will, and why our self-will has destroyed us. So if you could join us on Wednesday night, bring your hand out if you were here last Wednesday. If not, I'll have some more. Today we're on we're a different part of the book. So on Wednesdays, we're on page 63, and on Sunday, we're in Doctor's Opinion, and on Saturdays, we are in the amends process on page 78. We'd gone through, I wasn't here last Saturday, but I heard Stu did a great job. I was visiting the grandkids, and that was great, too. We covered money in the terms of the amends. Steps 9 and 8 and 9 is where we're willing to make right any people we've harmed, and we're making reparations, we're making things right. We're not asking for forgiveness necessarily, but we're trying to repair the relationships that we've destroyed through our self-centeredness. We are willing to forgive everyone, but not necessarily make amends to them because it may harm them or others more. So there's specific instructions in the book. They spend five or six pages just on this step. They did leave out one important part, which I'm going to talk about today, only because society's changed since this book was written. If I want to lose my fear of people and the world, I really need to be willing to forgive everyone that I've ever been angry at. And then I have to be willing to see how I may have harmed them so that if they walk through the door, I'm not afraid to see anybody. And that's when you're really free. And it's a process. And it takes time. So step 9 isn't one you do in 10 minutes. And you don't do it till you've done your inventory and until you're willing to make amends to everyone you have harmed. And then you also have to know with your sponsor how you've harmed people so you know how to repair it. And so it's a step that can be lifelong. You never know where the opportunity will be to make amends. And we're on page 88, and we read about money. Anybody owe money when they come in here? It says we don't dodge our creditors. Anybody dodging creditors? So we go to them, we tell them what we're trying to do, and we don't be afraid of disclosing our alcoholism. If we need to, we need to be honest with these people in a way that doesn't harm them or others. And we don't use our alcoholism as an excuse for what we did, but we tell them what we're trying to do now. And he says, arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we're sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. I don't think we can blame alcohol on it. I think we can blame our alcoholism, right? You could still write a check if you're drunk. But if you can't work because you're drunk, then maybe you're slow to pay. It says, we must lose our fear of creditors. Notice must, and I put their people. No matter how far we have to go, because remember, we need freedom from fear and freedom from shame and guilt. And this is what this step is really about. It's about our freedom from shame and guilt, and it's about, have we forgiven everybody? And what kind of manner do we have towards people? And it says, we're liable to drink if we're afraid to face them, and I wrote, or anyone. If you're still in fear of people, they still have power over you in your mind. Does this make sense? And if they have power over your mind, then you have no power from God in that area of your life, and it may lead you to drink. It says, perhaps we've committed a criminal offense which might land us in jail for zoned authorities. We may be short in our accounts and unable to make good. We have already admitted this in confidence to another person, but we are sure we would be in prison or lose our job if it were known. Maybe it's only a petty offense such as padding an expense count. Most of us have done that sort of thing. I think so. You know where Bill was coming from. It says, maybe we are divorced and have remarried but haven't kept up the alimony to number one. She is indignant about it and has a warrant out for our arrest. That's a common form of trouble, too. So he's talking about criminal offenses. You have to be careful that you're not harming others when you make amends for your criminal offense. I would get advice. I would get advice from a sponsor and also from an attorney before you do this step. I think you have to be careful how you handle this if it's a serious criminal offense. It says, although these reparations, and it's reparations is compensation to an offended party or institution, take ephemeral forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. And I think these three pages you can use. These are principles that I need to practice in my affairs all the time. Now, it says, reminding myself, sometimes we have to remind ourselves that I have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. Now, why would we want to do that? Why would we want to make that decision? Because our experience without God wasn't very good, was it? So we want to try. We lived without God. How'd that work? We got a wristband, made a mess of our lives. So now we're going to see how our life goes when we're living with God. And that's what they're talking about, the spiritual experience, submitting to God, His will, His direction in all things. And we need to go to any length to get it. Half measures will give us half power, which is none, right? And actually, the experience we want with God is 100%. We don't want like a half experience, because it's not possible. You're either all in or you're not. And so we ask that we be given strength. So here's a prayer. That I be given strength and direction to do the right thing. So a lot of people talk about doing the next right thing, and you mentioned it in your birthday, but then I have to ask first God for strength and direction to do the right thing. I get the direction on what's the next right thing from God and strength to do that. Isn't that step 11, knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out? It's... Also on page 86, or 87, there's a prayer that throughout the day we ask God to show us what's the next thing to do and the power to carry that out. It all starts with God. And here's a key, no matter what the personal consequences may be, we may lose our reputation or our position or face jail, but we are willing. And I wrote here, we ask God and discuss with a spiritual advisor, you know, how we handle these things. But just every day in life, I have to have the strength and direction from God to do His will and to do the right things each day. It says we have to be willing. We must not shrink in anything. And I wrote, why? Because I have to clear the blockages from God, and I have to clear myself of shame and guilt. Anybody have shame and guilt when they come in here? And anybody look back on things they did and say, feel a little shame and guilt about it? That's normal. But now I have a different reaction to it. It doesn't have the power over me, the shame and guilt. I just wish I'd done better, but I understood that I didn't have any power to do better. But that makes me want to do better today and seek God today. So it says we will not regret the past or shut the door on it. The reason for that, when we see the past, it makes us turn to our Creator during the day, all the time, so we don't repeat it. Usually other people are involved. Therefore, we're not to be a hasty and foolish martyr who would needlessly sacrifice others to save himself from the alcoholic pit. And we have to remember that. It says, a man we know had remarried. Because of resentment and drinking, he had not paid alimony to his first wife. That probably has never happened to anybody in this room. She was furious. She went to court, got an order for his arrest. He had commenced our way of life, had secured a position, and was getting his head above water. It would have been impressive heroics if he'd walked up to the judge and said, "Here I am." We thought he ought to be willing to do that if necessary, but if he were in jail, he could not provide for either family. We suggest he write his first wife, admitting his faults and asking forgiveness. And I wrote of the not paying, not for his whatever, but the forgiveness for not following through on his commitment to her. He did, and also sent a small amount of money. He told her what he would try to do in the future. He said he was perfectly willing to go to jail if she insisted. Of course, she did not, and the whole situation has long since been adjusted. And I wrote, asking forgiveness without a plan of action is not going to lead to a positive result. So there has to be a plan of action in terms of amending a relationship when you ask forgiveness. I think one of the things I've heard a lot through the years is people who come in the AA, of course, their lives and relationships are a mess. And after 2 weeks, they're ready to do their amends, and they've gone to somebody, and then they spend 20 minutes of the meeting discussing how it didn't go well and what was wrong with the other person. Well, that may be all true, but you don't do 8 and 9 till you've worked the other steps, and you have to have the proper attitude when you're doing this. And I said, remember, other people have resentments towards us. Anybody ever have that? And they may never forgive us, ever. And that's something we have no power over, right? I was going to say here, no, I'll wait till we get to domestic troubles. Before taking drastic action, we might implicate other people. We secure their consent. So if you've harmed somebody and there are other people now involved in the amends, and he's going to talk about a business deal where he didn't pay somebody and now he's in a business with other people, and if he does that, then it may harm his partner. There may be other situations where there's other people involved. It says you have to obtain permission, consulted with others, ask God to help, and if the drastic step indicated, we must not drink. So before you do this kind of thing, it gives you four steps: obtain permission, consult with others, ask God to help, and if it's indicated, you must not drink. And then he's going to tell the story of one of their friends while drinking. He accepted a sum of money from a bitterly hated business rival, giving him no receipt for it. Probably being an alcoholic, he thought it was justified, right, and that he was doing the right thing. He subsequently denied having received the money and used the incident as a basis for discrediting the man. He thus used his own wrongdoing as a means of destroying the reputation of another. In fact, his rival was ruined. He felt he had done a wrong he could not possibly make right. If he opened the old affair, he was afraid it would destroy the reputation of his partner, disgrace his family, and take away his means of livelihood. What right had he to involve those dependent upon him? How could he possibly make a public statement exonerating his rival? After consulting with his wife and partner, he came to the conclusion that it was better to take those risks, and I thought about this line a lot, than to stand before his creator guilty of such ruinous slander. We could talk about what that means, but I think the way we deal with standing before our creator guilty is to admit our guilt and ask for God's power and forgiveness and help. He saw that he had to place the outcome in God's hands or he would soon start drinking again. And you know the things that are bothering you. That's why you have a sponsor. You know the things that you've done that are still eating away at you. And how do you repair those things? How do you make amends for those things? And that's what this step is all about. You want to be able to wake up each day and not carry all the baggage of the past. And that's what steps 1 through 9 are, so that we can live one day at a time. And he had to place the outcome in God's hands or he would start drinking again. Isn't that true of everything in our lives? And all would be lost anyway. He attended church for the first time many years. After the sermon, he quietly got up and made an explanation. His action met widespread approval, and today is one of the most trusted citizens of his town. This all happened years ago. I'm sure we can all look back and see how things have changed. Things have happened to us when we put ourselves in God's hands. We're better than anything we could have asked for. And so now we're getting to, and also I think that I wrote self-forgiveness. This is all how you forgive self, is by be willing to make amends and going through this process. I was able to forgive myself by realizing that I had no power to do differently or my self-will, and that I had the wrong manager, and that now I have a power and I don't have to live that way anymore. So I have a choice now, because I'm not in bondage to self. But when before I came in here, I was in bondage to self. I didn't realize it, and I had no power to do differently. I thought I was always doing the right thing. Anybody else? And made a mess of it and really harmed a lot of people. Now here's one. This is a funny line. The chances are that we have domestic troubles. Anybody else think that's pretty funny? Now, I want to say he's going to talk now about where there was infidelity and this and that. But there's no paragraphs in here on ex-wives or ex-husbands or how to deal with these relationships that are been very damaged. And that's because I think in 1938 or 9, the divorce rate was very low. And women didn't have their own, most of them didn't work outside the house. They didn't have their financial security to be able to make divorce. They were very dependent on the men. And so it was a different world. Now we have a lot of ex-relationships where we have children and share them with other people. And how do we deal with that? And that's not covered in the book, not because it didn't happen then, but it wasn't predominant. And maybe we should have a meeting on that, how we deal with these people we've harmed, where we have to see them all the time. But I really think that's dealt with in the book, because it's dealt with on page 67. And Ryan knows about this. We talked about it. The people we're dealing with in these relationships, they may be spiritually ill like us. And they may have their resentments, and they may not want to forgive us. But we have to ask God for patience, love, and tolerance towards them. We have to see how we can be helpful to them. We have to ask God to save me from being angry at them, save me, and how can I have a kind and tolerant view of them? And then the other thing that's helpful is to carry love into every situation when you're dealing with people who still resent you. And if you do that, you have a chance of getting some peace with it. You may not change them, but your interactions will be better. And maybe some people can share about that. But I guarantee if you haven't done those prayers, and if you're not bringing love into it, you can get into some pretty nasty situations, discussions. It says, perhaps we're mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if in this respect, or it could be a woman too, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relationships in the home. Drinking complicates all our relationships, doesn't it? And the reason we do sex inventory is because we've harmed a lot of people who we had relationships with. And we were very selfish. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. Can you see why? Because we're going to read about the next page, the alcoholic's like a tornado, right? Roaring through the lives of people. Well, who wouldn't get worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative? And it could be man or woman, anybody who's in a relationship with us. How could she be anything else? The husband, I love this. He's worn her out, and he's cheated on her, but then he feels lonely and sorry for himself. Anybody see that? Self-pity. And then I wrote, but who caused him to be lonely and sorry for himself? What behavior led to that? And that's where step four is really positive. He commences to look around. The nightclubs are equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he's having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we may say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved, I love this, often feels very remorseful at times, but not remorseful all the time, or he wouldn't keep doing it. Especially if he's married to a loyal and courageous girl who's literally gone through hell for him. Whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. Well, one, you can stop your behavior, right? And then the other thing that doesn't talk about in the book a lot is you can change your life. You can change your personality. You can change the way you treat people. This is what they call living amends. And people, you can make them amends in that regard. You can stop doing what you were doing. You can be different. And you can be different with God. You can't do it just by saying so. But if you work the steps, you will be different. And people react to you. But another thing I see, people want people, the wives to change in 20 days or 30 days. I'm sober 30 days. I don't understand. Well, hello. When you drank for 20 years, they're not going to forgive you in 30 days. They're not going to see the change. But I've seen it myself, and I've seen it in myself and in others, that when we do change, people change the way they react to us. And then we think they're doing better, but it's just us. They're the same. And it says, in a way, if she knows that we have been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. She may insist on knowing all the particulars. She will know who the person is, and we have no right to involve the other person. We are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further, but the key is it should not be repeated. And then you can change the way you see this person through the prayers on page 67, change your attitude, and they're going to talk about how you make amends to the family on the next page. We are more than that, though there may be justifiable exceptions, we have often found this the best course to take. Now, here's the key. Our design for living is not a one-way street. It's good for the other person as well. It is good for the wife as for the husband. That's why we have Al-Anon. And that's why it's so effective. If you or your spouse go to Al-Anon, or they go to meetings here, you go together to Al-Anon. How you can repair your relationships, how you can change. It is as good for the wife as for the husband. And also, it's the same for exes too. And how do we handle these kind of situations? If we can forget, so can she. But she may not. It is better, however, that one does not needlessly name a person about whom she can vent jealousy. And then I was talking about here, we now have, in our society, problems with money, children, possessions, emotional restitutions, because of all the broken homes and broken relationships. And they don't really go into detail about that, but how do you handle that? And I believe that we have all the tools and the steps to handle that. But it's good to know how you've harmed people and how you're going to make amends. And then we hopefully we've changed the way we react to them and how we treat them. It says, sometimes utter frankness is demanded. I would think of a lot before I'd do utmost frankness, although, I was never in this situation, fortunately. But sometimes people want to write letters. I would, before you write a letter, I would have your sponsor read it. I just suggest before you do that, or send an email. No outsider can appraise such an intimate situation. It may be that both will decide that the way of good sense and loving kindness is to let bygones be bygones. Each might pray about it, having the other one's happiness uppermost in mind. I like that. When we pray, we should have the other one's happiness utmost in our mind. Our prayer should be outside of ourselves towards others and how we can serve God and others. I like that. Now keep it always in sight that we're dealing with that most terrible human emotion, jealousy. Anybody ever get jealous in this room? And jealous because our self-centered's threatened. I think alcoholics have a lot of problems with jealousy because of our excessive pride and our problems with self-esteem. It says, good generalship may decide that the problem be attacked on the flank rather than risk face-to-face complicated combat. So that's all enough about all that stuff. But here's where they start talking about the home. It says, we have no such complication. There's plenty we should do at home. Anybody agree with that? Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Anybody ever heard that? Or I'm sober now. Why are they acting to me, right? I'm sober now. And I've heard people say, well, you know, I was sober for 60 days and nothing changed, so I might as well drink, right? You've heard that too. Certainly he must keep sober, but remember, the sobriety is not the key and is not the treatment of our alcoholism. Because if I'm sober without the program of recovery and God in my life, nothing's changed. Somebody said, sober, son of a bitch, everything's real. And remember, our alcoholism occurs when we're sober. And so we have to treat how we live sober by changing our relationship with our Creator and allowing Him to direct our lives. So we're really talking about emotional sobriety here, not physical sobriety. And people get confused. They think if they're physically sober, everything's going to change. And things are certainly better the first 30-60 days when you're not drunk all the time. But then after a couple months, you're left with yourself and your personality. And if it hasn't changed, a lot of people don't feel any better. Nothing changes, nothing changes. That's not here. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But yet he is a long way from making good to the wife or parents or children for whom years he is so shockingly treated. A long way. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. I see a lot of people now who have no homes. They have no families. They've been alienated, especially the younger people. And it's changed a lot. Now here's a really subtle paragraph. I don't know if this relates to anybody in the room. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Anybody watch the tornado the other day? And you know, a tornado is pretty powerful. I don't think there's anything more powerful, is there? Roaring his way through the lives of others. So when you do your four step, you're really looking at your tornado. And you're looking how all the wreckage that you created in your life of self-will. Hearts are broken. And I like this. Sweet relationships are dead. They're not just bad, they're dead. Affections have been uprooted. You take somebody and you uproot their affections. That's pretty powerful words. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. Anybody relate to that? It's pretty sad. We've all done that, haven't we? And we don't want to do it anymore. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand? The wind stopped blowing." Now, it's a very powerful paragraph. Very powerful. We can't even see the damage that we've done because we're so blind to the truth. That's why it's very important to work the steps quickly. Because if you've just done 1, 2, 3 in your mind, but you're not actually doing step 4, you can't see it. And you can't see what you need to be to face and be rid of, and you can't see how your fear and resentment dominate your life. You can't see how you harm people. You can't see your selfishness. And we talked about that a little bit on Wednesday about the instincts of life. So it goes, there's a long period of reconstruction ahead, a long period. It could take forever, the rest of your life. We must take the lead, so we must take the lead, and we must stop looking at them. Just look at what we can do and what we can change. And remember, when that acceptance is the answer, when he stopped looking at his wife and criticizing her, and he changed the way he saw her, she became a better person. And she was a lot better person once he stopped criticizing her. It sounds crazy, and Carrie's laughing, but when you change the way you see somebody, they change because we've changed their glasses. They can still be the same. And even if there are things about them that you would like to change, you don't see them in a negative way. You see them as a human being who has a personality. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill. Anybody do that? It's a remorseful, but it's mumbled, you know. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it. I don't know how many people have done their four step and then gone and analyzed with the family, but you can change the way you see them and talk to them, being very careful not to criticize them. Remember, these steps are about us, not about them, and how we change. And you know, if we change, we should be kind and loving towards all instead of criticizing. Remember? Their defects may be glaring. Anybody have defects glaring? Anybody go to an AA meeting and see anybody's defects? Nobody else has done that? I thought that was funny. Nobody laughed. But the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. See, when we see other people's defects, some people say we see ourselves, right? We see our changes, and we don't see, when we're looking at the other person in a negative way, we don't see ourselves. And isn't that what we did our whole lives? And the fourth step is where we change that, right? We look at all our resentments and our fears. And here's something I pray every day. We clean house with the family, and I want to clean house with the world and everybody. And I ask each morning in meditation, I pray this, and I think about it, that my Creator show me the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. And I wrote to family, the world, to everyone. That's how I want to live. I don't always live up to it, but at least I want to meditate and pray on that in the morning. Then at night, when we do our inventory night, we're supposed to look at the day, were we kind and loving towards all, you know, and how we did. And then we ask God's forgiveness and what we could do better the next day. So it all ties together. And I guarantee you, if you show patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love, you'll generally get it back. And the key thing is that, what I heard a long time ago, what's lacking in any situation is the love I don't bring into it. And if I bring love into all my relationships all the time, I'll get positive feelings from it. And so I have to watch. I don't always do it. None of us do. But it's a goal, and it's something that we ask my Creator to show me the way. See, I can't do it on my own. I want God to show me through the day. Whenever something arises, remember, whenever we're agitated or doubtful, we pause and we ask God for the right thought or action. How do I stop? How do I practice this? And when I start to get disturbed. So I want to stop there. I went over a little long. But these are powerful pages and a lot of information. And then next week we'll look at how we live the spiritual life and how the promises relate to our spiritual walk. Thanks, everybody.